Real people, real radio.
Initiating the Truth Frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
For tuning in once again to the Reports Radio broadcast. My name is JD. We are live. We are every Monday through Friday, and it is 10 o'clock Central Time right now in the beautiful United States of America. And let's see here. I hope you guys enjoyed yesterday's show. I thought it was absolutely astounding. We finally got both pieces of the puzzle regarding this entire mortgage crisis scandal, and I hope you guys took something away from that interview yesterday with Scott and Greg. You can find it again if you go to the archives at redpillreports.com, or if you go to the archives at truthfrequencyradio.com, excuse me, that's where you'll be able to find that archive from yesterday. Also, want to highly recommend, just like I will be doing every single day, that we are coming up on a holiday here, guys, where you're going to be surrounded by friends and family. It's a perfect opportunity to present them with all of this mortgage crisis information because, you know, again, everybody out there in alternative radio land, people who are in the know and trying to figure out what exactly we can do to solve some of these problems that we're presented with here, well, this is it. You know, we have a solution right now, and it is the petition that Greg Morris has put together. You can find a link directly to that at the top of redpillreports.com. You can also go to the red link there that says mortgage crisis, and you'll find all of the articles that have the pertinent information in terms of what's actually going on with this mortgage crisis situation, and then all the ancillary documents, all the backup stuff that you'll need to support and the research that you'll have on your own. It all can be found in the sidebar at redpillreports.com, the sidebar 7. Save your home. It's such a great all one-stop shopping, so to speak, for everything you really need to know about mortgage crisis. So I really, really want to thank everybody who tuned in yesterday and those of you who are sharing that interview with other people. The listenership for the program has just blossomed in the last month, and for that, again, you know, I'm humbled, and I thank all of you guys who are out there reaching to us and sending emails of encouragement. I just cannot thank you guys enough. Want to once again recommend people and support Truth Frequency Radio. There's a little donate button there if you could throw them a couple dollars. They are doing so many cool things behind the scenes. Inkling of this week with beta testing area in the Listen Live link. You can go in a chat room now. So later on in the day, I'll fill the beans. We're going to have LC Vincent on the show. He'll be coming on to discuss once again his book, The 440 Enigma. So we're going to be talking about music history and frequency and things like that. It's going to be a very, very interesting discussion. And hopefully our connection will be better than it was last time, because last time we had a little bit of a grainy connection. So I'm hoping that this connection will be better today. But again, if you go to truthfrequencyradio.com, right at the top is a link that says List Live. Take you in chat room where you can sign up. We're in there also for the day, and so if you want to ask questions of me or to send our links, things like that, would be fantastic. very, very fascinating. It's one of my favorite subjects, obviously, is underground history, music, and how that can actually affect all of our health, things like that, moving forwards. So definitely looking forward to that particular phone call. Hang on here 1 second, guys. I'm going to try and reconnect to the show. I'm not sure that we're broadcasting right now, and I certainly would like to be. So anyway, if somebody is out there on Skype and can hear me, if they could let me know, that would be spectacular. Oh, okay. Anyway, giving you guys... a heads up about tomorrow too, Andrew, situation, the market situation occurring in the gold market as well, and this whole country of Russia situation. I think we'll talk about that. Be very interesting to Andrew. So do plan on tuning in for that tomorrow. Would appreciate that. Let us move on to daily news. There are a lot of things as you happening, and realize I had kind of a short news segment yesterday. Try and through some today. We've got some news coming out of Beirut, which is a place we haven't heard about for quite a while. But apparently, as the Agence France is reporting, the bodies of 230 people killed by Islamic State group have been found in a mass grave uncovered by their relatives in the Syria's Deir ez-Zor province, according to a monitoring group on Wednesday. The discovery brings the number of Shaitat tribal members slain during the jihadist summer advance in Deir ez-Zor province near Iraq to more than 900 total, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. The Britain group said it had learned from trusted sources more than 200 people have been found in a mass grave out in the desert, and the vast majority of them were civilians, many executed in cold. Tribe rose up against the Islamic State after it had driven out and rebel from the area. Hundreds of members of the Shia are actually still missing, according to the observatory, and which is a large-scale network, activist, doctor, military force, sides of the Syrian conflict report. The tribe discovered the group as they left their village from months of displacement after losing their battle against ISIS. They have been allowed to return only after agreeing to respect an IS curfew as well as a prohibition of gathering and weapons. And through the IS jihadist rules, anyone who is fighting and executed. So that is going on there. A large mass being outside of the year province inside of Syria. Very, very bad news going on there. And let's see, news out of Iraq also relating to ISIS. In this report coming out of Baghdad, at least 150 women who refused to marry militants of the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant were executed in the western Iraqi province of Al-Anbar, according to Iraq's Ministry of Human Rights. According to a ministry statement released just yesterday, ISIL militants carried out a number of attacks in Fallujah, buried bodies in mass graves in one of the city's neighborhoods, and at least 150 females, including pregnant women, were executed in Fallujah by a militant named Abu Anas al-Liba after they refused to accept jihad marriages. Many of the families were forced to migrate from the province's northern town of Al-Wafa after hundreds of residents received death threats. The ministry also said that many children died when their families were stranded in the desert after leaving their homes. So situation still very, very bad in Iraq, obviously bleeding over through all of the Levant right now. And, you know, the tragedy that is going on just seems to continue. And then in related news as well, the American forces have now fought their actual first battle against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And according to a report, counterattack, and it was killed by tribal force and other forces inside the army near odds with WEF and an attack move the base, which includes 100 U.S. advisors in it. Actual ground-to-ground combat involving these advisors inside of Iraq against ISIS, which is exactly what they said was not going to be taking place. The boots on the ground seemingly moving from an advisory role into an actual combat role. The field commander of the Iraqi army in the Anbar province said that the U.S. force equipped with light and medium weapons supported the fighter force model and was able to inflict casualties against the fighters of the ISIS organization and force them to retreat from the Al-Dolab area, which is about 10 kilometers north of the base that they were protecting. So again, boots on the ground from an advisory role into a direct combat role we can see here now. Very interesting stuff. Probably something they don't want us to be thinking about, but there you go. You know, we've sent them air advisors now involved in firefights outside of times. News out Mexico coming right now and doesn't have anything to do with the children who were taken by the government and then murdered. But this separate story, and this has to this is being corroborated by the FBI and the Mexican authorities down there, but almost 200 Americans have been kidnapped in Mexico just this past year, and 79 of those kidnappings took place just south of the Texas border in the Mexican state of Tamaulipas, according to an FBI interview with Breitbart in Texas. While the Mexican government continues to praise their security campaign, shootouts, kidnappings, extortions, and highway robberies continue to plague the border states. In Mexico, a person is kidnapped every 6 hours, according to the statistics published by Mexico's National Citizens Observatory, a nonprofit organization that keeps track of crime figures in Mexico. And the Breitbart Texas met with FBI Special Agent Michelle Lee, who spoke about the number of kidnappings in Mexico that the agency is investigating here in 2014. Back in 2006, the agency only had 26 total kidnappings, and so far this year, the agency is looking into 199. Ms. Lee goes on to say that kidnappings for ransom remain pretty rare in the United States, but in Mexico, kidnapping for ransom has made criminal organizations a pretty quick profit and has become a pretty big money-making venture. And she goes on to say that in about 50% of all the kidnappings in Mexico of U.S. citizens, a ransom demand is made. And in those instances, a financial gain is generally the motive and typically the crime of opportunity, but they also say that the other half usually involve people who are involved with illicit activities or people who might know someone who's involved with illicit activities such as drug dealing or trafficking of people across the border, things like that. So about 50% of the 200 Americans that were kidnapped down there have some sort of ties to criminal activity or organized crime, but maybe going down to Mexico right now, not the best idea. Maybe that's just me, but who knows. Let's see, runs, and this is kind of has to do with the economy stuff that we're going to talk about when we get to the economic section, and we'll definitely be talking with Andrew about this tomorrow. The lines in the stores, Tuesday and Wednesday, and what happened essentially was that the current crash, people started to really panic, decided that probably put their money into hard assets, but the acquisition of hard assets isn't very easy in Russia, so people actually were just buying anything they could get their hands onto, you know, furniture, electronics, things like that, trying to preserve some of the value of their currency as it was sinking. It has been curbed. The crash of the seems to be, for the moment at least, halted, but there were people out of line stores, you know, buying all kinds of goods, and it's interesting. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because obviously, you know, Russia is a huge country, and they have a central banking system very similar to ours. And we just in 2 days, the amount of panic that can be flushed into the population of the people and what their reactions are as they're panicking. And this is a great example of that. You see not only the food and the water and all that stuff disappearing very quickly, but high dollar items, the things that you wouldn't typically suspect people would be running out to buy. But as the value of your currency goes down, that's apparently what it's going to look like. So there's some good pictures of some of the stores in Russia. Again, if you go to redpillreports.com, Rob always does such a great job of getting a show section built for us, which outlines some of the guest links and what we're going to be talking about today. But it also goes over all of the news links that are pertinent to you and the things that we're trying to cover on a daily basis here. So that article, Russians Flock to Stores to to preempt price rises is there amongst that international news, and some of the pictures are pretty telling in terms of what might happen here. It's a good thing it only happened in Russia, and it could never happen here, right, guys? All right. Happy days are still here. Okay, and the EU court has ordered that the Palestinian militant group Hamas be removed from the bloc's terror blacklist. This move comes over 4 years after Hamas appealed its terror designation before the EU. The EU first banned Hamas's military wing back in 2002, though the organization's social and political divisions were not put on the terror list. Following a series of Hamas suicide bombings during the second Intifada, or uprising back in 2003 of September, the EU extended the ban to include the entire organization as a whole. On September 12th of 2010, Hamas appealed the ban largely on procedural grounds. In its complaint, the group cited a lack of due process, specifically that it had not been properly informed that the act was being implemented. It further asserted that the legitimately elected government, as a legitimately elected government, it cannot be labeled as a terrorist organization, saying such a designation flies in the face of the principles of non-interference with the internal matters of a state. The court accepted the organization's argument, saying that the decision to remove Hamas from the list was not based on an examination of Hamas's activities, but rather on an examination of the procedures used to institute the 2003 ban in the first place. Unless an appeal brings closure, however, the funding freeze against the group and sanctions against its members will remain in place for another 3 months. So Hamas, at least in terms of the government side and the social side, has been removed, according to RT, from the EU terror blacklist. So, do you support that decision? I don't know. That's a toughie for a lot of people out there. Obviously, one of the people who it's tough for is Netanyahu. I like saying his name that way. Don't ask me why. It just, when I see his face, it just makes me want to do that. I don't know. But Israel obviously reacting furiously yesterday to the European Court of Justice's decision to take Hamas off of the EU list of terrorist organizations, rejecting explanations that it was just a technical step and that it will be overturned before it is implemented. They are saying that right now. Obviously, this decision is up for appeal. But at the point of time in which we're sitting right now, the situation is still that the Hamas organization has been removed from the terror blacklist. Hamas, according to Netanyahu, said they have committed countless war crimes and countless terror acts. It seems, too, that many in Europe, on whose soil 6 million Jews were slaughtered, have learned nothing. But we in Israel, we've learned. We'll continue to defend our people and our state against the forces of terror and tyranny and hypocrisy. So again, Netanyahu very upset that that Hamas has been given a little bit of a pass from the EU court. Obviously, there'll probably be an appeal based on this decision. But again, we solved this entire problem yesterday, put an iron dome over both of these places, the West Bank and Israel, and then just reverse the polarity. Take away the keys for 100 years. Tell them if they can get along in 100 years, we'll give them the keys back. It seems pretty simple to me. Let's just use technology and solve the problem. If these people aren't capable of being adults, then they probably actually do need some sort of adult supervision. That's all I'm saying. Not that the United States is that adult supervision, but I imagine amongst the millions and billions of people on the planet that we could find somebody out there who is potentially, responsible. Anyway, news from the Pentagon now confirming military buildup along the Russian borders for quote unquote peace and stability. There's nothing like a military buildup to bolster peace and stability, I always say. That's what my grandma used to say too. So the Pentagon has now confirmed military buildup along Russia's borders to ensure long-term peace and stability in the region. Earlier, Moscow accused NATO of a sharp increase in their air activity and intelligence flights over the border zone, replying to RIA Novosti's query on the increased number of NATO flights around the Russian borders. The Pentagon representatives told the news agency that the military presence of the alliance has now increased, but all operations are being carried out under utmost transparency. The current efforts of the EU European Command and the Pentagon officials said are in line with Operation Atlantic Resolve and demonstrate American commitment to the collective security of NATO, the long-term peace and stability of the region, particularly in light of Russian quote unquote interference in Ukraine. Oh man, hi pot, we're kettle and you are black. My goodness. The official also added that this does include other measures, including an increase in air and land and sea presence, as well as holding military drills. So the war drums between NATO and Russia continuing to beat probably isn't going to be chilling out anytime soon. I think that we can see very clearly this war of attrition that's being waged against Russia via OPEC right now. I mean, as the price of oil comes down and their currency is just toppled, I don't know. I think it seems to be like this is pretty much a war of attrition at this point. So I'm interested to see, you know, what's going to happen next. It's difficult to say. Let's move into some national news right now. There's a lot of goofy things going on in our country. This first story involves a law enforcement officer in San Francisco who has been placed on leave, which is depressing to me. So this Northern California Police Department in San Francisco we're talking about put one of its officers on leave earlier this week. And in this investigating now threatening comments from his Twitter account about demonstrators who have participated in protests over the recent deaths of unarmed black men in Ferguson, Missouri, and in New York, the San Jose Police Department said Officer Philip White was absolutely sidelined after officials learned of statements made Saturday from his Twitter accounts. In one of his tweets, this is what he said. He said, "If you threaten me or my family, I will use my God-given and law-appointed right and duty to kill you." Okay, so let's just break that sentence down for just a second. First of all, you're a law enforcement officer, right? I totally understand the position where if somebody threatens you or your family, that you have the right to defend yourself. That's a given. That's called liberty. That's something that you're actually, supposed to be upholding according to your oath, officer. But when you move into this whole law-appointed right and duty to kill you, first of all, threatening somebody, unless you're doing it with a weapon, like in someone's face, if I threaten you, if I say, I'm going to come to your house and I'm going to beat you up, yeah, that's a crime. That's called assault. It's actually a misdemeanor, Class C, which is about the least amount of, crime that you can commit. Does a Class C misdemeanor carry with it the death penalty? No. So clearly this officer, who's an idiot, I'll just go ahead and say it, does not have a law-appointed right to kill someone for threatening them. That's just how that goes. And then the fact that he believes it's his duty also, not just his right, but it's his duty to kill you if you threaten him, that immediately should qualify him for the National Police Registry that we are going to build. I don't know who is going to help me do this, but we are going to build a National Police Offender Registry. And this guy, obviously not dripping with altruism here, should be number one on the list. Should be number one on the list. In another tweet, it gets worse. He said, if anybody feels like they can't breathe, or if anybody feels like their lives matter, he says, I'll be off duty tonight at the movies with a gun. I mean, are you kidding me? That this is an officer, this is a guy who's being paid by tax dollars supposedly to support us, and he's saying, if anybody else feels like they want to complain, I'll be off duty at the movies tonight with my gun. Wow. That guy should be fired. He's probably literally right now getting paid on vacation, but unbelievable to me. So, fantastically enough, though, the San Jose police chief, Larry Esquivel, came out and he just said, listen, offensive, disrespectful, and inappropriate social media comments have no place in the political public discourse surrounding the tragic loss of life from recent officer-involved incidents. He said, we absolutely condemn these comments, but they don't condemn him enough to fire this guy, which is obviously what he needs, because I would not want to be out in the streets when that guy is walking around thinking he has a right and a duty to kill someone for threatening him. Because you know what? If you're a law enforcement officer and your job is to revenue generate, then people are starting to wake up to that, and they realize that that has nothing to do with liberty and has nothing to do with what your actual job should be in the United States. And the longer you guys go down that road, the more often you talk about good cops not arresting bad cops. The longer you guys deal with quotas and push contracts on people unlawfully, the more people are going to wake up, because people like myself are going to sit here and tell people exactly how they are being oppressed by law enforcement and the duties of law enforcement that are outside of the scope of peace officers and outside of the scope of constitutional sheriffs, who obviously we support wholeheartedly here at redpillreports.com. But you law enforcement officers out there that think it's your right or your duty to kill people for threatening you, or you think it's your right or your duty to put somebody in a cage for not paying a ticket regarding a stop sign, and if they don't want to go in a cage, you think you can shoot them. Think about this situation. I'm sorry, I got to get on this for a second, but think about this situation with the 78-year-old man or 76-year-old man who was tased twice in Florida because he had the wrong color sticker on his license plate. And it wasn't even his license plate. It was a dealer plate, which doesn't even subject it to sticker laws anyway. And what happens? So this police officer tackles this 76-year-old guy who's obviously got sensitive knees and a sensitive back because he's 76 years old, and tasers him twice on the ground, okay? First of all, how many people have died because of tasers? Many. So calling that stuff a non-lethal intervention is ridiculous at this point. It's essentially electronic torture. But here's the deal. If that 76-year-old man had died as a result of this officer, what would happen to that officer? You give up yet? Because it's nothing. Absolutely nothing would happen to that officer. He would get a vacation. They would look into it. They would say that the 76-year-old man was being, didn't want to go into a cage because he didn't believe or consent to why he was being abused by an officer. So the officer probably felt like he had, I don't know, the God-given right or maybe even the duty to tase him. And if the guy had died, well, no harm, no foul. Don't fight with the officer. I digress. We got a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Stick right here. This is, of course, your week.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
Here at MyPatriotSupply.com, our customers are number one. Built on a self-sustaining business model, we don't owe our existence to big banks or big business. Instead, the company was built by you, the customer. The success of My Patriot Supply is a testimony to the loyalty and dedication of each and every one of you, to our old-fashioned values and top-rated customer service. These elements alone have made us the number one choice of patriots everywhere. We believe that being prepared should not be a luxury reserved by people with large disposable incomes, which is why we have the products you need at the prices you can afford. We bring you our Patriot Pantry brand of storable food, which features top-of-the-line flavors and carefully packed to store for 25 years. Plus water purification systems, non-GMO heirloom seeds, survival gear, and much, much more. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Hangar 18, your TFR Roundtable.
Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. I'm sorry I went on a little tirade there at the end, but these law enforcement officer stories just make me crazy. I want to highly recommend everyone go to truthfrequencyradio.com, go into the search bar right there at the top and type in the word Bluebeam, and then you can use your arrow keys and your space bar to fly a little rocket ship around and completely destroy the website, which is pretty much all I do during the breaks, just so you guys know. I'm pretty much just going through and taking all the other hosts off of the website as we go, and it's good fun. Good, good fun. Also want to highly recommend you guys go and check out the chat room. We are in there right now, and if you guys have questions or comments and or getting ready for Elsie Vincent's interview at the 11 o'clock hour, be a great place for you guys to go and post some questions, things like that. If you have them, we'll do our best to open up the phone lines again towards the end of that interview as well. I realize that we have a lot more news to get through, so I am going to just jump right back into it. Big news out of Washington yesterday, as the United States has now announced they are going to restore full diplomatic relations with Cuba and open an embassy in Havana for the first time in more than half a century. And this, of course, follows the release of the American contractor released yesterday. I have got some background noise here. Hang on one second, guys. We're going to figure out where that's coming from. Hang on one second. Good times. This is what happens when you have live radio and about a million windows open. You get to run around and try and figure out where the noise is coming from. And, of course, I'm not able to do that right now, so give me just a second here, guys. I apologize, as I said, but this is just sometimes how it goes. Well, it seems to have stopped, so hey, whatever. Moving into new full diplomatic relations with Cuba. This is a really big deal. Obviously, I think this is probably some sort of reaction to the fact that Russia and Cuba were getting ready to kind of get back into cahoots right there. Obviously, Cuba has opened up one of their ports to Russia so that they can plant some boats down there. So, full new diplomatic relations with Cuba. We'll have to see what that's going to end up meaning for us in the long run here. I will imagine that it will mean that we can do some tourism, probably be able to buy some cigars again, which will be really nice for those of you out there who like cigars. Anyway, another report coming out of Breitbart today, Hillary Clinton in the news, disgustingly enough, saying, quote unquote, that Black Lives Matter. The only reason I'm drawing attention to this particular story is because it literally just drips with irony, and it makes me absolutely ridiculously crazy, because Hillary is a known supporter of Planned Parenthood, and I'm not going to sit here and knock Planned Parenthood. They obviously do a lot of good for a lot of people who need some sort of care that they can't get in other places, but at the same time, clearly part of a major eugenics program, and if you have any question about Hillary Clinton's involvement with Planned Parenthood, that's a pretty easy search to find. And if you want to understand why Planned Parenthood is not pro-African-American, this following statistic should probably startle you, but more than 50% of black children are not born in this country thanks to Planned Parenthood. So the fact that she would come on TV and say, oh, Black Lives Matter, but at the same time be fully supporting the Planned Parenthood eugenics program is just, astounding to me. So I just want to remind everybody that Hillary Clinton is an ironic mess. And I wish I had a time machine and I could bust through the next few months so I could just completely ignore her. That's where that noise was coming from. Sorry, guys. Figured it out. We got it solved. Okay. Beauty Alive Radio. Okay, good news. Here, I got some good news here. This is also coming out of here, the United States. Maybe this isn't good news to you, but to me, this is fantastic news, and I'm talking to all of you achievers out there. I hope you guys know who I'm talking about. The Big Lebowski, possibly the best film ever made in the history of history of filmmaking, really, has now been indicted into the National Film Registry. So it will be there for posterity, forever, preservation, as a national treasure, The Big Lebowski. I love the movie. I don't know if you guys are fans of the movie, but it's probably, again, my very favorite movie that's ever been released. It was a 1998 Coen Brothers classic, just freaking amazingly great movie. So that and a, and 24 other films yesterday got nominated into the National Film Registry. So I just thought that was fantastic news. I hope you guys like that too. Black choppers are apparently tormenting downtown Dallas residents, according to some reports that came out of RT just this week. Beginning this Monday morning, Dallas residents went online to report a surreal spectacle that some seem more consistent with a conspiracy theory lore than in reality. But black helicopters with their lights off buzzing the rooftops of Dallas all week this week. So if you see it, don't be too alarmed. It's just them preparing to come and take all our guns away. Maybe not. I don't know. But I imagine that's probably has something to do with it. There was also a man arrested for depositing $9,000 into his own bank account because, well, that's not illegal. $10,000 or more usually raises the ire of the IRS, and they usually have to report that. But this gentleman put $9,000 into his account. His name is Franz St. Fleur. He is a Toronto resident. But he essentially tried to put the money into his account. The bank manager took him aside and tried to get him to put his money into other such, other, you know, investment products. He really wasn't interested in any of that and tried to put his money in the account. So the cop showed up and arrested him, said that he was, questionable and it's, you know, ridiculous. So, I don't even know what to say about that. Anyway, let's move back into, some economic news here right now. I'll let you guys know what's going on in the market. Market is up big right now, about 200 points, obviously stemming from the fact that the Fed had their meetings yesterday and I think today as well. But the inkling from the meeting and the language that they are putting out, they're using words like patient when they're talking about the time frame in terms of raising interest rates. So obviously investors are seeing the fact that the Fed cannot raise interest rates right now and probably won't be doing so for the foreseeable future as an indicator to get back into the market. And that's what we see here today. And I would imagine the same thing is going on. Haven't looked yet. Okay. Crude oil down just a little bit in early trading today. Still above $55, but pardon me. That's still a pretty low number, $55.47 right now for a barrel of oil. And let's see if commodities are reacting to the stock boom. They kind of are. Gold fell a little bit in late trading yesterday, and it right now is very flat, sitting at $1,194.60. And your ounce of silver right now will set you back $15.93. So there you go with that. Probably one of the larger pieces of news coming out of economic stuff right now is a report from Zero Hedge, and we're talking about a Geneva-based company called Govnor. Now, Govnor was one of the only five mega-large banks that traded physical gold in Switzerland. There aren't a lot of major banks that actually trade physical precious metals. And what's interesting is Govnor now has announced just this week that they are not going to be trading physical commodities anymore in terms of gold, which isn't really that surprising that Govnor would be moving away from gold. Because Deutsche Bank just actually did the same thing. I don't think it was even that long ago, a couple of months ago perhaps. But what's unusual about the Govnor situation is, A, they only recently just started trading physical gold, not even a year ago, and they're already calling no joy on the whole program. But the real surprise in the story is the reason why they chose to discontinue their gold trading. And according to Bloomberg, what they're saying is that executives at the bank decided to abandon the precious metals trading business partly because of difficulties in finding steady supplies of gold where the origin could be well documented. So what are we talking about right now? We're talking about the idea that undocumented physical gold is now being traded publicly in the market. And we're talking really effectively about robo-signed gold, just like we have gold or just like we had the robo-signed mortgages. You know, that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing the trading of gold, and the question now is becoming, how do we validate the ownership of this gold? You know, people could have, at this point, gold in their vaults, and somebody 3 months, 6 months, a year from now could come knocking on your door and say, well, that serial number on your gold bar matches the serial number on a document, promissory note that I've got, which means that gold is mine. So according to this very large bank, Govnor, that's not worth the risk to them. So they're going to back completely out of physical gold trading. And that's a pretty big deal. I mean, I don't know how you guys are going to read that, and we'll obviously talk to Andrew about that tomorrow, but That seems like a pretty big deal to me. And then in another Zero Hedge report, the Fed apparently right now sitting on a $191 trillion time bomb. That's a lot of money for all of you out there who aren't familiar with the word trillion, but it's a big one. So the prime focus for markets right now, obviously we just talked about the markets being up, is whether or not the Fed continues to state that it will raise rates after, quote unquote, a considerable time or after being patient, right? So it all comes down to these little tiny 2- and 3-word phrases. But the reality of the situation is the Fed cannot and will not raise rates anywhere near normal levels at any point in the future, because doing so will effectively blow up the financial system. So let's go through this together and just explain what we're talking about here. So currently, the U.S. has over $17 trillion in debt. It's actually $18 trillion now. And the U.S. is not going to be able to pay this off. And that's not like an idle statement. We issued just over $1 trillion in new debt just over the last 12 weeks, simply because we don't have the money to pay off the debt that is coming due from the past. So since we don't have this money essentially available, the U.S. is now simply issuing new debt to raise the money to pay back the old debt. And this is why the Fed needs interest rates to stay as low as possible. Any slight jump in rates means that the U.S. will rapidly spiral towards bankruptcy. Indeed, every single 1% increase in interest rates means between $150 and $175 billion more in interest payments on U.S. debt per year. So, the Fed wants interest rates low because it makes the U.S. debt load much more serviceable. This is why the Fed keeps screwing around with language like after a considerable time or after we've been sufficiently patient, despite the fact that rates should already be markedly higher based on a rule called the Taylor Rule, which you can look up on Google, as well as the state of the U.S. economy. It's all essentially a ruse to pretend that the Fed has some kind of real choice in the matter. And there's not, that's not even the totality of the story. The total of the story is that the government banks right now are sitting on $236 trillion in derivatives. And of that $236 trillion in derivatives, 81% of them are based on interest rates. So to put another way, currently U.S. banks have bet an amount equal or over to 1,100% of the U.S. GDP on interest rates. If you had to take a wild stab in the dark at which banks those were, I imagine that you'd probably get it right. J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America. In other words, it's all the too big to fail banks. So again, we're going to see the Feds keep the interest rates low for the foreseeable future, and that's obviously going to result in a boom in the stock market. We're sitting at 17.5 right now. I can imagine we'll see a raise tomorrow, probably getting us back into the 17.7, 17.8 area going into the weekend, because happy days are here again. Feds are going to, you know, continue going down the same road that they're going down. So that's what's happening there. Congress also extended over the weekend a series of tax breaks. The U.S. Senate approved a sweeping package of tax breaks, sending to Barack Obama a bill that allows individuals and corporations to save billions of dollars on taxes in their 2014 tax season here. At the Senate's final day of the year, lawmakers passed some 55 so-called tax extenders, deductions that expired at the end of 2013 but will retroactively be restored with the current legislation. The Senate easily passed the measure 76-16 after the House passed it earlier this month. The members hastily crafted the extenders package after a much broader bipartisan tax reform measure collapsed spectacularly in November when the White House threatened to veto it because it left out critical provisions for working families. These tax extenders have become a traditional quirk of the cumbersome U.S. tax system, and some of the documents in Tuesday's final package have been extended annually since the 1980s. So, yeah, par for the course, moving forward just like we always do at Congress, giving the tax breaks to the people that need it. Let's move into Russia here real quick. Russian leaders took drastic act on Wednesday to combat the worst threat to financial stability in President Vladimir Putin's 15 years in power, calling the nation's economic and security elite and by day's end erasing the ruble's loss for the week. The efforts eased the most immediate dangers to the Russian economy, but the nation still appeared to be heading into uncharted territory, with the rising living standards that have formed under the backbone of Putin's rule receding into memory And even if the ruble does hold steady, Russia does now face a recession, steep inflation, and a constrained economic future, according to officials there. Obviously, this is a perilous combination that Putin has been trying to avoid and has been able to avoid for a long time. Not a good situation in Russia right now. We'll have to, again, talk to Andrew about that tomorrow and find out more about what is actually going on there on the ground. Let's move into some tech news right now. We called it yesterday, the very first class action lawsuits against Sony, against the hacked employee information, are now coming to fruition. Former and current Sony employees filed a lawsuit against the Hollywood studio earlier this week over the high-profile computer system hack that continues to cause sensitive stolen documents to end up on the web. On Monday, attorneys representing two former Sony workers filed paperwork in the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California, asking that a jury be assembled to weigh in on what could become a class action lawsuit between upwards of 15,000 current and past employees and the major motion picture company over the massive security breach suffered earlier this month. According to the class action complaint, Sony should have been better prepared to protect against hackers who recently pilfered troves of company data, especially in light of similar lapses suffered by the company in years past. Just like what we said, Sony's responsibility was to take care of all of this information, and they did not do that. This, I believe, will be the downfall of Sony. I think that eventually what's going to happen, I mean, think about contractual obligation. Here's another little tidbit. They canceled the showing of the interview. That's the movie that supposedly this entire hacking incident took place over. Obviously, the hackers, we had the story yesterday coming out and saying any movie theaters that show that movie, I already forgot the name of the movie, the interview, will be subject to 9/11 style attacks. So because of that, Sony has now pulled the plug on the release of that movie. It's not going to be in any theaters at all. It was scheduled to be released on Christmas. But think about the ramifications of Sony's contracts with the actors that are in that movie. I mean, those guys put in the work. They're dependent upon that movie being released to pay them. Is there not going to be a lawsuit involved with that? Think of all the ancillary companies that were involved with making that, just that one movie. Those people are all depending on an income, and that income has now been affected by Sony's own incompetence. So obviously there's going to be a lawsuit there. I don't know what's going to happen to Sony. I'll tell you, the CEO is going to step down. They're already talking about that, you know, with her release of emails regarding Barack Obama. Some of that stuff pretty dicey, not really what you want to get out in the public domain. I don't know how she's going to step down and save face, but I imagine this will be the death of Sony. So, again, the class action lawsuits are starting, just like we predicted. There you go. I want to talk about this Skype situation right now. Skype has now released a new component to its technology, and I'll tell you, well, I guess I'm on the fence a little bit about this because some of the situation revolving around this is a little sketchy, but overall, I think this is a really great deal. So Skype has now gone completely sci-fi, ladies and gentlemen. They've gone all the way to Star Trek now. They have announced an upgrade offering real-time translation for users. So again, real-time translation and its voice over video. And the cool thing, I highly recommend people go check this article out. Again, if you go to redpillreports.com, this is in the tech section of today's show link. But there's a video that corresponds to this that Microsoft put out. Microsoft, obviously, the owners of Skype at this point. They put a video out about this to kind of showcase the technology. And they took a school in Tacoma, Washington, which is south of Seattle, and they took a school in Mexico City, Mexico, and they had third or fourth grade classes, and they put two students, and they were able to have a conversation in real time, the Mexican student would speak in Spanish, and it would be instantly translated audibly to the English student, and it's just so heartwarming. It's so neat to see barriers like that being brought down. But let's get into the scarier part of this story. This whole deal kind of seems like a revolutionary idea, as this app is going to obviously allow for free video communication across thousands of miles. But now this live translation feature is very interesting because the way it works is that it actually records everything that's been said, and it anonymizes it and records it, and then essentially looks back at it to figure out slang and things like that. So Microsoft is really counting on the learning machine aspect of this particular translator system, which they're saying is going to get smarter as the technology gets used. They're starting with English and Spanish, but as more people start to use it, they're going to go into other languages. But so I know a lot of people out there might be a little hesitant to allow Microsoft to record every aspect of your conversation and then try and use it for their own devices. But first of all, they're doing that anyway, so you're really not going to get away from that. We're using Skype, you know, all the time. There's a good chance that everything you're saying, especially hot words and things like that, are being flagged and recorded. But the program that they're talking about with the Skype thing is going to learn by, as I said, recording conversations in order to analyze scripts and train the system to better learn each language. So, you know, there's some question about whether or not there's going to be a good thing or a bad, you know, which do you, how do you weigh it? Is it more bad than good? I don't really know. I like the idea of a universal translator because, you know, one of the major barriers for communication in the world is language. So if we can get around that, and then real time, boy, I think that is going to knock down some walls. That little, story video that's in this article, the two girls talking, is about enough to bring tears to your eyes. So I kind of fully support, Skype going in towards that direction. There's another story in the tech stuff that will absolutely bring tears to your eyes as well. And it is about a dog that was born with deformed legs, that thanks to rapid prototyping and 3D printing, they were able to build this dog, some prosthetic attachments and do it really quickly and really inexpensively. And you can see a video of this poor dog that was born with chondrodysplasia, which is a congenital disease that makes their joint cartilage deformed, essentially. Running through fields just like a regular dog at this point. And the reason I put it in the tech department is because obviously we're talking about the rapid prototyping capability of 3D printing and how that is so important, especially in people who, you know, need limbs. This is something that they can do. They can draw it all on a computer. They don't have to make molds. They don't have to continue to pump out things day after day. They can do it once. If it doesn't work, they scratch the idea and redraw it and build it again. So this is a major medical advancement in terms of rapid prototyping and 3D printing. But in this particular case, it helped a dog out. And I don't care what happens in a movie, any movie, guys. I don't care what happens as long as the dog lives. That's pretty much my only criteria because dogs are way better than people for the most part. So anytime I can see a story of a dog being benefited by humanity, man, I just love it. Love it, love it, love it. Okay, let's move on to some health stuff here real quick because there's just so much going on. Let's see here, Cuomo. Mr. Cuomo, the gentleman from New York, who is obviously the governor there, has now announced just yesterday that it would ban hydraulic fracturing in New York State. The complete ban of hydraulic fracturing in the state of New York has now been initiated by Governor Andrew Cuomo, and he is doing it citing health concerns. I cannot believe it. It's like a politician that finally woke up. He's saying, man, it's my job to protect the people of my state, and the state officials now have concluded that fracking, as the method is known, could contaminate the air and water and pose inestimable amounts of damage to public health. And that conclusion was delivered during his year-end cabinet meeting that he convened in Albany just yesterday. Also came amid increased calls by environmentalists to ban fracking, which uses water and chemicals, obviously, to release oil and natural gas trapped deeply buried in the shale. Just such great news for the people in New York. I don't even know what to say about that. Finally, somebody doing something up in New York. I wonder if there'll be an appeal from the major frack, you know, organizations. I can only imagine. Here's a goofy story. There's a gentleman in Texas right now who is taking a lot of flack. His name is Mark Oberholzer. And, well, poor Mark, I'll tell you, he's been getting a lot of calls and a lot of emails because a picture of his particular pickup truck that he sold last year, well, it's been featured in a jihadist propaganda video picture posted online from Syria. The gentleman says he's got no idea how his former F-250 made all the way over to Syria, where it's now apparently being used by the Islamic extremists in the Anwar Al-Awlaki area there. But the Texas City tradesman said he's received thousands of phone calls and faxes because the image, which shows an anti-aircraft gun in the bed of his old pickup truck, still has his Mark number one plumbing written on the side of the vehicle, and it still has his phone number on there too. It's funny to me that some people out there in America would see, you know, this guy's vehicle and think, well, I'm going to call this guy, this Mark number one plumbing dude. He's obviously on the wrong side of the fence, thinking that this plumbing guy somehow is in Syria with an anti-aircraft vehicle, you know, weapon in the back of his truck. But that's what's going on. He said he traded it off to a Ford dealership back in October and was hoping that the dealership would take his decals off the side of his truck, but they did not. They took it to an auction, and it's obviously gone through several owners since the time that he last saw it. But apparently in Syria, they don't care if the trucks that they're using have labels on the side. But this poor guy, he wants to make it very clear that his family and his company has no interest in aiding and abetting terrorists. So before anybody else give this man a call and run him through the ringer, you know, probably go ahead and assume that whatever incidents led to his truck going over there probably was not at his request. And then in some housing news, Marie Tondro, who's the mayor of North Miami, Florida, found guilty on 6 counts of wire fraud stemming from her part in an alleged mortgage fraud scheme. Defrauded lenders to the tune of $8 million. She faces 30 years in jail right now. That story is long and convoluted. You can find it on redpillreports.com under the show section and all the links. Keep it right here, guys. We're going to come back with LC Vincent. This is going to be a fantastic discussion. You guys won't want to miss this. Keep it right here. 3-minute break. This is, of course, your daily dose of deprogramming. Keep it right here, guys.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your co-workers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, Deke.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him. Right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the Iodine Now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at HempUSA.org.
You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
We'll be right back.
gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. I apologize again for not getting through as much of the news as I would have liked to today, but I highly recommend people go to redpillreports.com, check out the show section there, because then you can find out all of the stuff that I was not able to cover, but there's still a lot of important things going on in the world. You know, one of the things we like to do here at Red Pill Reports, obviously with the name of the show, is talk about the different layers that exist in this matrix of control that is going on around us all the time. And it's in that vein that I wanted to bring Elsie Vincent back onto the show. Lauren Charles has an amazingly diverse background, ladies and gentlemen. This gentleman has done more in exploration in terms of frequency and sound than anybody I've ever spoken with. He's a writer, a musician, obviously, a photojournalist, somebody who kind of considers himself to be an interdimensional explorer, which is a moniker I can certainly relate to as well. Born in Los Angeles, spent his formative years there before moving to Chicago, where he graduated from the University of Illinois. And then while in Chicago, he also studied under Duane Pham, who is a principal at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, while at the same time forming several music groups and also recording for Mercury Records. At the same time as doing all that, if you can believe it, he actually worked for Motorola on the construction of frequency modules, which were based on patents of Nikola Tesla, and then he moved to San Francisco, did 3 years of postgraduate study at the San Francisco State University in radio and television. So to say that this gentleman has an idea or a concept about frequency and music and how all of these things are interrelated would be an understatement. So we brought him back on the show today to discuss his book, which is called The 440 Enigma. And this is just fascinating stuff, ladies and gentlemen, I have to tell you. I'm really, really looking forward to this discussion. So, Elsie, thank you very much for joining us once again on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being with you all.
Well, it's, you know, this is, again, it's one of these issues that I think people really underestimate the importance of. You know, we're really starting to realize the more that we study science, that everything really inherently is frequency. Everything is, even, you know, all physical matter, all thought, you know, the radio waves, the television waves, everything can be boiled down in the simplest of components to frequency. So why then are we talking about frequency today in terms of music? Well, it's because Elsie's research has uncovered some musical history, and I was a music major, and I had never heard of any of this, so he's really uncovered some aspects to musical history that affect frequency and affect all of us, and probably in a more profound way than any of us are really prepared to admit, I think, at this point. So, Elsie, before we get into frequency and music and the Rockefellers and all of this, would you fill us in a little bit more on your background and how you got so invested in this topic specifically?
Well, yeah, it's a great question. When I was living in San Francisco, I would go to the San Francisco Symphony, and I was a subscriber to their concert series. And as I was exposed to more and more music, classical music, it occurred to me that, you know, at some point in the history of classical music, the idea of a standard tuning frequency obviously evolved, because without standard tuning, different orchestras couldn't play with each other and different musicians couldn't play with each other. So anytime two or more musicians came together at a certain place and time, they had to agree upon a standard tuning. And as, of course, as society progressed, the necessity for having a standard tuning from, you know, one orchestra to another, from one country to another, became an evolving issue. During the 17th century and 18th century, different standards evolved with different countries. Giuseppe Verdi in Italy proposed the 432, the frequency standard of A above middle C being 432 hertz. Different composers like different, as it turns out, different frequencies. Wagner supposedly liked A being 444 hertz. And the actual spread as this push for a real standard progressed went from a low end of 412 all the way up to 450. And so there was that that extreme spread and that extreme ratio. So anyway, as I was going to the San Francisco Symphony and thinking about it, there was an opportunity to study with the concertmaster of the San Francisco Symphony, and he had a program that lasted 3 months, and essentially it exposed students, or I don't know if students is the right word, but exposed people went to that series with the timeline of how classical music developed, starting with Gregorian chants. So starting from there and moving forward, we went through the entire history of classical music and how it evolved. And towards the end of that three-month period, I approached the concertmaster, and I asked him what I thought would be a simple question, which was, who determined that A equals 440 hertz and that the tuning frequency became a standard? Who determined this, and how did it come about? And I thought he would have a 1 or 2 sentence response, and you know, that would satisfy my curiosity. As it turns out, he didn't know. And surprised me, he had no real firm idea. He knew that it happened sometime around the 1900s, but as to how it happened and how it evolved, he was clueless. And I was kind of shocked, slightly. I didn't express it, but you know, I was surprised that someone who was so invested in music as their life really wouldn't know how this happened. So that piqued my curiosity, and that question stayed in the back of my mind for a long time. And as it turns out, I began to, you know, decades later, as it turns out, or maybe several decades later, I came across a variety of different people who were doing frequency research. A very quick story. The way this actually all came about is that I was writing about music for a website, and I also have interest in an audio business, an audio company that imports speakers, and I received an interesting phone call one day from the daughter-in-law of a very powerful senator on the East Coast, and as it turns out, this person had a similar interest in music and frequency, and used it for meditation, but she was always very curious about tuning frequencies in general, and she told me an interesting story, which I haven't shared with anyone yet, but I'll share with you and your audience. And it's a fascinating story because it really tells you how important the tuning frequencies really are. She told me that she had met a man named Wes Bateman when she worked for the government, and Wes Bateman, who at the time lived in Las Vegas, had a fascinating history. And I'll give you a very capsulized aspect of it. Wes Bateman was a long-distance truck driver with a high school education. I don't think he ever finished high school. And Wes was driving along southwestern United States, you know, I think it was in the late 60s or something. No, it wasn't even that. It was in the early 60s. And he was driving late at night in the desert, and he saw this bright, blinding flash, and that was the last thing he remembered. And he woke up along the side of the road 4 days later. He was, you know, basically picked up by the police outside of his truck. And the area around him was highly radioactive. He was taken to a hospital. And when he regained consciousness, it turns out he, for some strange reason, now possessed an ability to, he was a mathematical genius. Literally overnight, in the space of 4 days, wow. He went from being a high school dropout to a mathematical genius. And he began to develop formulas. And he became so proficient at this that he actually became an advisor to Gene Roddenberry on Star Trek. And he also created the entire concept of wormholes. Wow. And Roddenberry rewarded him with an appearance on the early Star Trek series with Leonard Nimoy and and the rest of the cast and crew. And he was a commander of a starship. That was his one of his little perks. But Wes Bateman, from that point onwards, started doing acoustic research. Started in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid and went to all the various pyramids around the world, including the ones in Mexico, and did lots of frequency measurements. And he developed what he called the Ra tuning system. And the Ra tuning system, which is based at 424 hertz for A, that is essentially what he claimed was the sacred harmonic tuning frequencies. Anyone who read my book knows that there are multiple candidates for different tuning systems. I actually prefer the 432 hertz for A. But Wes went around to the Great Pyramids of Egypt, the King's Chamber. He went around to the pyramids in Mexico and South America. And after all of his measurements, he and a man named Alan Howarth published a paper about tuning frequencies, and that's what they based their theories on.
Well, what were they looking at specifically? Was it like the internal space, or was it the mathematics of the building?
Okay. They're looking at the internal spaces and the ratios of the internal spaces.
Okay.
And they claimed that they found a similarity from one pyramidal structure to the other. That was consistent, and that's how they developed their own tuning theory of A equals 424 hertz. As I said, personally, after studying that theory and Dr. Leonard Horowitz as well as others, I came to the conclusion that I think the most the most accurate one is 432 hertz.
Right.
A equals 432 hertz because essentially, it seems like there's a cosmic linkage between the number 432 and the rest of the world.
Let's interject here for just one sec, because I'm not sure if you maybe didn't hear the show earlier this week, but I think I mentioned you yesterday. I refer to your work really often because, again, I'm a huge music nut, and when I first learned about that, I mean, you really opened up a whole new world to me. But over the weekend, you might find this interesting. You're familiar with the musician formerly known as Prince, or he might be known as Prince again.
Right.
Okay. He did.
And he's known as Prince again, right?
I think so. I don't think he's the symbol anymore. I think he's actually calling himself Prince again. But over the weekend on Facebook, he did a 3-hour question and answer period, kind of. Essentially, he didn't really do that. He was supposed to be there for 3 hours, and he didn't really show up until just the very last minute. And people had been posing questions, hoping that Prince was going to come along and answer some of their questions. Well, he only chose to answer one question. And this is the question. Yeah, this is really interesting. This gentleman named Emmanuel said, "Greetings, my dear brother. Please address the importance of all music being tuned to 432. And wouldn't you know it, that is the one question that Prince decided to answer." And his response is three words. He says, "The gold standard." And then he also included a link to an article that explained why music should be converted to 432. And today, I am prepared right now to play a couple of different tunes for us here. And I just want to kind of get it into people's minds what it is that we're talking about, the change that can take place in your mind from listening to something that is tuned to 440 versus something that is tuned to 432. So I went back, I'm on YouTube now, and I've got John Lennon's Imagine. And this is, ladies and gentlemen out there, this is the standard tuning version, or what we consider to be the A440 version. So just kind of close your eyes for a second, and I want you to listen to, 15, 20 seconds, 30 seconds of this, and just kind of feel in your mind and in your heart and in your body what these sounds, feel like. Do you feel like this particular version of Imagine is good? Is it wonderful? Does it make you happy? Let's think about it. Hopefully we'll start hearing it in a second. Radio, and it's always fun to try and get anything accomplished here. Let's try this one, see if this will go. Okay. Okay, so that was a crash and burn, Lauren. We tried to do that. It didn't really work. But if you guys go onto YouTube, you can find the original version of John Lennon's Imagine, which for all intents and purposes should make everyone feel wonderful and sunshine. But then if you listen to the 432 version, there's a very significant difference to the way it makes you feel in terms of resonance, don't you think, Lauren?
I do. You know, people hearing our conversation probably are thinking, you know, really, what's the big deal? What, you know, what difference does it make? You tune your guitar or your musical instrument to 440, you turn it to 424, tune it to 432. I mean, what real difference could it make as long as everyone else is in tune with whatever you've tuned your instrument at? But here's why it makes a difference. Frequency is the organizational principle of matter, and throughout the universe, if you study the planetary orbits, if you study the orbits of moons around planets, you see certain numbers in harmonic, you see certain numbers and ratios repeated over and over and over again. Just as if you study nature, you find out that's something called a Fibonacci series of numbers constantly repeats, whether you're looking at a nautilus shell or the way the flowers are arranged on a stalk, the flower petals are arranged on a stalk. These numbers, like harmonic ratios, are just the patterns of nature in life, and they're repeated over and over again. The Greek culture was the first culture that made a linkage between music and these harmonic ratios.
Which culture was that one?
The Greek culture. I mean, they're the first ones to formalize it. I won't say that they were the first that studied it, but to our historical knowledge, they're the first ones that formalized their study of it. And the importance is that as we look through the universe, as we look through the cosmos, we find certain harmonic ratios and certain number patterns repeated over and over again. So it makes poetic sense, and it makes also scientific sense that if you have a musical tuning standard that are based on these ratios found in nature, which are also found in the ratio of the construction of man, because we are also built that way, as well as our cells are built that way. If we find a vibrational tuning standard that is a reflection of that same harmonic ratio or the same harmony of the universe, obviously it's going to be beneficial, just as if we can postulate that if we based our tuning standards on a ratio that is disconnected from those harmonic ratios, you're going to create conflict, disharmony, disunity, and chaos. And that's actually what we've ended up with, because the tuning standard that is now current in the Western world, which is AE equals 440, is completely disconnected from all cosmic and harmonic sacred ratios, sacred numbers. There is no connection, whereas 432 is intimately connected. And as I mentioned in previous shows, just to run through a few examples, the diameter of the moon is 2,160 miles, or 5 times 432. The diameter of the sun is 864,000 miles, or 432,000 times 2. And the precession of the equinoxes is 25,920 years, or 432 times 60. 12 hours is 432,000 seconds. So 432 is part of the cosmic sacred numbers. It's just embedded in creation. So it makes sense that you would have a musical tuning frequency that is based on the same numbers of creation as your body is built upon. And other things that people are just learning is that all cells have a vibrating pattern, and there's something in every cell called ion channel. The ion channel is an electrical charge that basically determines how that cell is structured, and those ion channels vibrate to the frequency ranges which they're built upon, which is, strangely enough, 432. So if you have some music whose tuning standards are not being the same ratios, you're creating disharmony within your body and within your mind just by listening to music that, you know, on the surface appears to be very beautiful and lovely, but at the same time, it's also being very destructive, subtly. If anyone really wants to really go into the subject matter, there's a book I can recommend. It's not my book. I came across it in my research, and it's a little book called The Little Book of Coincidence, and the author is John Martineau, M-A-R-T-I-N-E-A-U. Book is only maybe it's a quarter inch thick, but the information in it is mind-blowing and staggering, because what Mr. Martineau does is he goes through the orbits of the planets, the orbits of the various moons around the planets, and he shows that there are constant harmonic ratios that are repeated over and over and over again throughout our universe and throughout our galaxy. And these same harmonic ratios are repeated in our own physical structure. So it makes sense that they have a musical frequency that simply reflects those ratios, because when we have a musical frequency tuning that is not based on those ratios, we're going to create discord within our mind and body. And this discord, according to Leonard Horowitz, ends up in social conflict and ultimately in wars. And getting into the Rockefellers, a family that basically is heavily invested in psychoactive drugs, as well as more materials and more supplies, obviously they're going to make their money by promoting conflict. So it's no surprise that the Rockefellers, through the American Federation of Musicians around 1910, pushed to get the 440 hertz frequency as the world standard for orchestras throughout the Western world, which is exactly what they did. I mean, you know, on the surface of it, you think, why on earth would the Rockefellers, being as wealthy as they are, have any interest in a musical tuning standard? It does not, you know, consciously compute.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it'd be part of their program, really.
No, it's not. I mean, you think, well, anything financial? Yeah, that makes sense. But why would they be so heavily invested in promoting a tuning standard vehicles 440. Well, the reality, the reason behind it is, if you have a tuning standard that ends up promoting discord and conflict, you end up subtly promoting conflict or among peoples, among nations, and those discords ultimately end up in real physical conflict, which we call war. And if they own companies that profit from war materials, war supplies, medicines, psychoactive drugs, and just drugs in general, obviously they're going to make more money because their markets have expanded. So it's all nefarious.
Well, you know, what astounds me about the whole thing is not only the agenda, but, you know, the idea is that we are swimming in a sea of frequency. The entire universe, you know, even as the planets are rotating around the sun, you know, they're all vibrating at a certain frequency. There's essentially a symphony going on around us all the time in terms of frequency.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So
exactly.
A lot of people may not understand that we're not just talking about 440 and the A above middle C, because what happens in music is that as those frequencies are further divided, you get into overtones and you get into undertones. So you can see quickly a situation develop where not only that specific 440 frequency might be effective or, you know, affecting us individually, but all the divisions of that, which also fall outside of the scope of nature, could also be affecting us. You know, you get down into the very low range A, or the ultra low range frequency stuff that corresponds with that 440, and that real low inaudible frequency could be doing a lot of damage to us, as could the high end of the frequency divisions that we're not able to hear. So I guess that's a question that I want to have, is how much effect are the non-audible tones having on us, in your opinion, Lauren?
In my opinion, a tremendous amount, because, you know, if you, or if anyone does research as to the acoustic research that our Navy has done, all their research for audio frequencies is below 20 hertz. So it's below the audible frequencies. And you know, you get into the realm of brainwaves and brainwave entrainment. And that gets into another topic. It's a spin-off, but I strongly suggest people do the research on the internet while they still can do it. And that is the research behind cell phone towers and brainwave entrainment. And you'll find out that there is there's more to cell phone towers than simply relaying signals.
Yes.
It can be a means of creating moods within vast swatches of a geographic area. In fact, there was a woman from the CIA who got drunk at a party and reputedly said that they could play the emotions of the American public like someone else played a piano just by manipulating those frequencies.
That's so frightening. And again, we'll get back into the research aspect of your book here in just a second as we kind of watch the Rockefellers not only implement the 440 at a small level in terms of symphonies, but then they really worked hard to bring it into the homes and the minds of the American people and the international population, globally. A lot more into this and moving into this brain entrapment. This is just absolutely astounding stuff. Keep it right here, guys. We've got a 3-minute break. We'll be right back with Lauren Charles talking about the 440 Enigma. Keep it right here.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a 1-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube.
Advertising, user experience, has always been our number one priority on YouTube. Recently, we've noticed that there is an abundance of clear white blank space in the margins of each page of YouTube. So we asked ourselves, why don't we fill these with bright, flashy ads? Now, every page will have full-size ads on the edges, and they may or may not be relevant to the videos you're watching. These ads might be unsavory enough to make you want to hide your screen from your parents, but that's what makes YouTube Plus all the more interactive.
Cause what are you gonna do? Switch to Vimeo?
YouTube Plus. What are you gonna do about it?
Within Radio with Tom Barnes and Tommy Woodgate. Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We are right in the middle of a discussion with L.P. Vincent about his new book, The 440 Enigma, and we're talking about Well, essentially, the obfuscation of music, the obfuscation of frequency at the behest of the Rockefeller family. And I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of my very favorite books that I own, and I cannot recommend it enough for the holidays. If you've got a musician in the family, if you've got somebody who is anti-Rockefeller in the family, if you've got somebody who's interested in physics, metaphysics, and frequency, any of those types of subjects, this is going to be a book that they're going to want on their shelves. Elsie, where can people go to get this book?
They can go to lcvincent888@gmail.com. Just write to me directly, and I'll be happy to send you an autographed copy. They can also get it through Amazon, but they're not going to get an autographed copy.
Okay, so lcvincent888@gmail.com. Get your autographed copy for Christmas, guys. This is a perfect, perfect Christmas gift. I love it. I'm not kidding. I've already sent out 3 copies of this to other people because I think it's a fantastic piece of research. So before the break, we were kind of talking about the Rockefeller Foundation or the Rockefeller family and how they have essentially, starting back in the early 1900s, institutionalized the A above middle C being 440 that we all kind of assume is normal for Western music theory these days. But I want to talk a little bit more about how it got so prevalent in our society, because obviously there's a transition that took place from just getting it in the concert halls and the symphony halls into the homes and the hearts and the minds of the people. So could you talk about that and maybe the Deegan connection and kind of how that evolution happened?
Sure, I'll be happy to. What happened was this. There is a musical instrument maker who started around the 1870s. His name is John C. Deegan. He was based in Chicago. And John Deegan started by creating what they called the Glockenspiel. The Glockenspiel was just a handheld series of chimes that people, that marching bands would use. And the reason he basically refined the Glockenspiel is all the ones that he heard sounded horrible. So because he was a musician, he decided, well, you know, I'm going to fix that and I'm going to make a quality instrument, which he did. But as he was doing that, and this is several decades later, is around the 1900s. Of course, a Glockenspiel or any musical instrument that's percussion-based has to be tuned permanently. In other words, you can't retune a Glockenspiel or a vibraphone or a xylophone or anything that you can strike. It has to be created from birth.
Right, and I'll just clarify that a Glockenspiel is similar to a xylophone in that you're hitting an object of metal or wood that's been shaped to a certain shape, so the only way that you could tune it would be to reshape that piece of wood. So once the tuning is set on an instrument like that, it's done.
Exactly. That is the key to what I'm going to go into now. So John C. Deegan developed an entire range of percussion instruments. As I said, he started with Glockenspiels for the orchestra, but he went into bells, chimes, vibraphones, xylophones, anything that could be struck and create a musical sound. But he also realized that he had to base all of his instruments on a certain tuning standard, which is obvious. You can have musical instruments based on multiple tuning standards because you can never have them in the same orchestra playing together. So the question was, what was it going to be based on? Well, as it turns out, Mr. Deegan was very prominent in social circles in New York City, and met Mr. Rockefeller. And Mr. Rockefeller gave a grant to the American Federation of Musicians, of which John C. Deegan was a very, for the promotion of a tuning standard of A equals 440. So when Mr. Rockefeller did this, of course, it solidified Mr. Deegan's own prejudice, which was A equals 440. And 2 years later, strangely enough, John C. Deegan opened an enormous musical instrument plant in the city of Chicago that covers one square block, 5 stories high. I mean, this, even in terms of $1,900, it had to cost millions and millions of dollars. And there's just no way that someone making Glockenspiels could have financed something this enormous.
Okay.
So the original Rockefeller Grant Federation of Musicians was 1910. The actual finishing and the construction of the building for John C. Deegan, it was in 1912, obviously. It took him a few years to build. So there's a coincidence of dates here, which leads one to believe that there was a loan generated from the Rockefellers to Mr. Deegan to build that building. And the reason that building was built, percussion instruments two classical music orchestras throughout the world that had their tuning based on 440. Now, if these musical instruments are being purchased by classical symphony orchestras around the world, and they cannot be retuned to any other frequency that are based on 440, that means all the instruments that can be tuned, which would be some of the woodwind instruments, some of the, obviously, the violins and cellos and string bass, obviously, they have to go along with the tuning of the Opus 440. Like, so that's how it was subtly promoted.
It's like checkmating an orchestra, almost. You know?
Yes, that's exactly. And you know, the ironic thing was that this, according to Dr. Leonard Horowitz, this tuning was formalized right before the outbreak of World War II. There was the British Standards met along with the representatives of the Third Reich, strangely enough, and pushed this tuning of A equals 440 on the orchestras of the Western world, especially Britain and France, which is ironic since both British and French classical musicians were adamantly opposed to tuning A equals 440, but nevertheless, this tuning was imposed on them from the top. Wow. And that was how that became solidified. But, you know, there's one aspect of the book which really has nothing to do with tuning, but it has to do with it really has to do with the Rockefellers, and it has to do with how they have a pernicious effect upon our society. And it's an offshoot of the tuning controversy, but it's nevertheless fascinating, and that is the entire creation of country western music was actually created out of New York in 1925 by the same agents of change.
Are you serious?
Absolutely, yeah, it's in the book. I'm absolutely serious. Country music was created in New York, you know, which beggars the question. You know, you've seen these, you know, I'm sure some people have seen these for salsa, where there's a bunch of guys sitting around, western guys sitting around a campfire, and you know, someone dips a chip into a salsa, and they say, New York City. It's like,
right.
How could that be, right?
Right.
Well, but the reality is, and this is verifiable, strangely enough. I mean, country and western music was, and the whole genre of country western music was created around 1925 out of New York City and imposed upon the people of the south of the United States from Nashville, the Frankfurt School of Music, School, which is a group of refugees from Adolf Hitler's Third Reich, came to the United States with the express purpose of subverting the United States to communist goals. And one of their major influence pathways, besides taking over the three main teacher colleges of the United States, which they did, was to subvert music throughout the United States. And what they did was they basically, you know, their motto is divide and conquer. And by creating a division of consciousness within the United States by preying upon the mentality of the Southerner who had gone through the Civil War and lost it, they wanted to reaffirm and solidify that loss. So they thought the best way of doing that was to create a kind of music or a genre or style of music that constantly reflected that pattern of loss. And so they created country western music. And if you go to the Schiller Institute, basically gives you a timeline on how all this happened, but their emphasis was on certain themes. As they put it, the lyric lines were obsessed with themes, of looser themes of hurting, crying, cheating, lying, killing, drinking, gambling, shooting, and dying.
Sounds like every country song ever, doesn't it?
It has them all there, right?
What, can you name any artists that would have been related to that time period and related to this so people have an idea, you know, in their mind, who specifically we might be listening to?
Yeah, I'll just give you just one example. You know, Gene Autry. And most of people don't think of Gene Autry as anything other than a cowboy star, but Gene Autry started as a country western singer and then went into movies. And, of course, Gene Autry became extremely wealthy. He bought the Los Angeles Dodgers, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Throughout the United States. But the reality is Gene Autry started as a singer. And the whole push of these people out of New York, and they were led by a man named Theodore Weisengrund, the whole push was to picture country and western singers as being very simplistic folks with very simplistic music, dealing with themes that were always very depressing and very losing oriented. They actually went so far as purchase a radio station in Nashville, WSM, which became The Voice of Nashville. They purchased to house the shows that were broadcast throughout the United States. And they purposely dressed the performers in very garish, outlandish, and almost clownish kind of outfits, you know, sequins and flashy clothes, the kind of clothes that almost appeared to be clownish, right?
Right.
But you could not be well dressed and appear as a country western music star. You had to look garish. And this was all part and parcel of their programming. And I know this sounds outrageous, and it was outrageous when I came across it, but all of this was done on purpose. The entire, you know, even though country music has evolved a great deal, and I actually enjoy a lot of it, but the reality is it was based and started as a way of furthering divisions within the United States and furthering a consciousness, which is a consciousness of loss, a consciousness of,
despair.
Despair, exactly. Wow. So not only do they mess with our minds with the tuning standard that disconnects us from the base and ratios of the universe, but they purposely go out of their way to create a musical style and genre that emphasizes things that are destructive and hurtful.
You know, the issue here, again, and what we're talking about now, boy, this conversation took a really unique turn. I really am glad that you brought that up, because we're talking about the militarism of music, essentially.
For negative social change.
Well, and I read a recent book. Well, first of all, let's just talk about rap music for a second. There are so many reports from inside the rap music industry that absolutely spell out very clearly that the industry itself was designed to promote lawlessness, to promote this thug mentality, to promote, you know, what we see developing in inner city black culture now. It was all paid for by, you know, I want to say the military industrial complex. And the only reason I think that, it probably wasn't, it was probably paid for by more specific groups within that. But I've also read a book recently about Laurel Canyon and about the hippie movement.
Yes,
and I mean,
I'm familiar with that.
Boy, you can't throw a rock on Laurel Canyon without hitting some sort of musician whose father or mother was, like, you know, an admiral in the Navy. And it's all of them, Mama Cass, the Zappas, to everybody. So what you're kind of talking about,
Jim Morrison,
blah, it's crazy. Right. People think Jim Morrison's parents were dead. No, not at all the case. I mean, really, really interesting stuff when you start really delving into the big music production genres, you know what I mean? But so talking a little bit about the country western influence, that just seems really is that in terms of your research, the first instance of a genre being introduced, or you know, the idea of a whole musical genre being created to subjugate people? Is that the first time we see that?
It actually is, as far as from my own research. And it's not, I wouldn't quite put it subjugation, because that's more overt. I'd put it as subversion, because that's much more covert and hidden. Because, you know, this whole approach to controlling populations and thought patterns and thought processes is really very subtle, and yet it's very, that's why they did it the way they did it. And that's, you know, it's just so astounding when you do the research and you see how country and western music actually started and who financed it and why they did it. It's mind-blowing. And you know, it's part and parcel of the tuning frequency program, and basically it's to create division, conflict, hopelessness, and despair. I mean, everything music should accomplish, which is positive feelings, thoughts, love, progress, all of that. Mm-hmm. It just does the opposite.
Well, that's just remarkable. It seems to me like they've really gotten their program really well honed, and it makes me wonder, you know, what else that we're being subject to, just in a musical sense, that might be, you know, completely built to, again, to can keep us divided and to keep us, you know,
suburban. Let's get back to what you started to go into, because I completely agree with you, and that's the whole creation of rap music. I think the creation of rap music, even if it was, shall I say, a natural progression, but I don't think it was. But even if it were, I think at some point the powers that be came along and said, you know, we can use this as a vehicle for social distortion.
Yes.
I'll give you a very brief rundown of my own research on it. There was a group, the very first rap group, which was in the 1970s, and probably no one's ever heard of them. They were called the Lost Poets. There were three black guys out of New York City, and I've actually got their album because I thought it was fascinating. It was beautiful. I mean, they were actually talking about things in a musical context that were really powerful, because even though they were talking about negative things, they were also giving you an alternative that was, hey, you know, things are negative, but there's a way out of it, and it comes down to your own personal responsibility, and you can do it. And so even though they were dealing with negativity, they ended up pushing their audience towards the positive. So that was in the 70s. But I read, and I think you can probably find this article on the site called Henry Makow, and that's M-A-K-O-W, but I read, and I've had it reinforced to me by various insiders in the music industry, that in the early 1990s, a conference was held up in the Hollywood Hills, and the top record producers were brought in.
Right.
And they were basically told from on high, and when I mean on high, I mean people who basically had the power of life and death over them.
The Rockefellers. Right.
Well, I won't say it's the Rockefellers, because I can't prove any linkages, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Right.
But all I know is they were brought into a large house, and they were told flat out that there was going to be a style of music, and it was, you know, going to be called rap or hip hop or whatever. And this music was going to become increasingly negative, and it was going to be geared towards black communities, and it was literally to create lots of money for the people involved, and also to create lots of social distortion and social friction, and that's how they were going to make their money. And the main beneficiary, I mean, you mentioned the military-industrial complex, but the main beneficiary was the prison-industrial complex.
Yes,
because the more people they could keep behind bars making license plates and whatever, but, you know, actually, the prison industry-industrial complex is huge. People just don't have any idea.
There are more black people in prison right now than were ever enslaved in the United States, just to get that out. I mean, this is an industrialized, absolute subjugation method that we've got going on here.
Exactly. And you know, what people don't, a lot of people don't realize, black, white, or whatever, is just the negativity of rap music and rap culture, besides demeaning women and being antagonistic to people of other races, creates constant social discord. And it's just drilled into children at an early age that, you know, the world's against them, you can't succeed, and that's all because of the man. It just paints a negative panorama for the rest of your life. And when you have a negative panorama, you're basically going to say, well, what the hell? You know, I might as well turn to crime, because I can't do it any other way. So if I want to get ahead, and I'm not talented enough to be a basketball star, I might as well be a drug dealer.
Right.
You know, it's horrific when you think of the social implications, but the music fosters that end result. And they do it on the purpose, because they want cheap slave labor, literally slave labor, in the prisons. And this fills the prisons. And that was one of the messages of that conference in the Hollywood Hills, that they knew that this kind of music was going to produce these results, and they wanted these results because it was going to make them money and it was going to make the prison industry money, and so they went ahead and pushed it. And the guy who wrote the story, by the way, was very anonymous. He says, "No, I left because I wouldn't have no part of it, but I was also threatened with my life if I ever revealed it. So that's why I'm not going to tell you who I am."
Right.
But it all makes sense, because why would you have an industry that constantly promotes negativity towards the opposite sex, that constantly promotes negativity towards any kind of social responsibility, like raising your own children? You know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it does. What are the benefits? There aren't any. It's all negative.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I mean, to me, it's just so astounding that what we're actually talking about, again, is the militarization of a genre of music and then it being fully just unleashed upon the American people. You know, this is one of the things I like to bring up when people are talking about the Ferguson situation. I'm not somebody who's going to sit here and say, obviously, you know, that nobody should be accountable for their actions. But at the same time, I have a lot of trouble blaming people that are clearly affected so significantly by their environment. And we're talking, you know, inner city black kids right now that are subjected to rap music or 20 years of, you know, violent gangster rap music. And then you put them in a community where there's really no opportunity. The education is poor on purpose. The CIA is bringing drugs into the community. There's liquor stores all over the place. And all of the entertainment is geared towards making you angry or upset with your surroundings that you really can't control anyway. You know, it's no wonder that these kids react and act the way that they do. It's exactly mission accomplished for whoever initiated this plan, you know?
I couldn't agree with you more. And you hit on a key word there, which is environment. You know, the social scientists of the Ivory Tower universities look on the social environment as something that's physical. They look at concrete structures, they look at housing projects, they look sometimes a little more abstract, economic opportunity, but what they don't almost never really consider is the environment of the musical culture, which to me is absolutely supreme and takes precedence over all of that. Mm-hmm. Because the way you think determines the way you act.
Yes.
And if you're constantly being bombarded with negative thoughts about how to relate to the opposite sex, or, you know, you got a problem, you snap a cap at somebody, I mean, that's not how you solve things.
Right.
That's how you go to jail. That's how you end up being dead or being hunted down. And that's no basis to build a society upon.
Mm-mm. Well, what really astounds me about all of this is that if you just look at the trail from where we, you know, where the music basically was taken over by, an agency or a group of people who wanted to instill this this disease. We're talking about, you know, over 100 years ago that this plan was kind of really starting to take
That's
root.
Right.
And then
we
see that develop through the institutional, dissemination of that tuning frequency through Deegan's organization, and then we start to see them messing with genres of music. But, you know, one thing that we haven't talked, obviously these people are in tune with the idea that frequency affects all of us. And now I'm more concerned about the cell phone towers and about all of the frequencies, because again, we talked earlier in the show about, you know, you take the 440 and then you start dividing it down to where you get into these ultra low frequencies like the Navy uses, that can have a profound effect on us. And I wonder if they have moved so far along with this plan that we are constantly now being bombarded from sources other than our TV or other than the radio of these, you know, horrible, horrible frequencies, because it seems like that would be the trajectory that these people would have been on, you know?
Well, that's true. I mean, but fortunately, God provides, and there are ways of neutralizing all of that. An issue, you know, we don't have time to go into it, but anyone who wants to do the research, I'll just give you a starting point under Nikola Tesla pink plates. If you look under those two keywords, you'll find an avenue of opportunity of finding a way of protecting yourself from this stuff. And it's really it's a combination of frequency pollution, vibrational pollution, as well as social distortion from the direct aspects of a musical culture that's just going in a downward spiral. Doesn't have to be that way, and we have to fight that, obviously. We just can't accept what they're doing to us, because I won't, you know, and I'm sure I'm not alone.
Well, and that's the key, too, is that until you're aware of it, you can't really advocate against it, you know, until you understand that we have a problem and that there's more, it's likely that not only is Nickelback the worst band ever, but they're actually could be physically doing damage to your body by listening to them. Those are important things that people need to know, because you're driving around in your car in a closed environment and you're subjecting yourself to loud vibrations that are not good for you. And that's by design, people. And that's just, you know, it permeates the entire planet at this point. So when we talk about the big issues, you know, chemtrails and music pollution, those are two huge ones.
Okay, let me give you a very quick little light bulb here.
Okay.
Do you ever wonder how this whole idea, this whole subculture of huge booming bass drums has developed, especially in cars, where, you know, you're stopped at the stoplight and got a half mile behind you. You can hear somebody who's got a van or a car that's got a bass drum going off. Those frequencies go down below your threshold of hearing and they're very destructive. They're constantly reinforced.
We're out of time, Lauren. I really appreciate you coming on. I hope that you can come back in the future. Thank you very much for being here today.
Hey, I'd love to. Thank you so much for the opportunity. LCVincent888@gmail.com.
That's right, LC.
According to a 2010 earnings report, Google earns nearly $80 million in a single day. On August 15, 2012, Google was fined $22 million by the FTC for illegally stealing your data. Google learned its lesson, right? Wrong. The very next day, in a show of arrogance, the Washington Post reported that Google employees rode tricycles around sacred Mayan ruins.
Because we know where you are, we know where you've been, we can more or less guess what you're thinking about.
Can you trust this megalomaniac with your personal information? Can you trust Google? With Microsoft's Bing, Steve Ballmer has personally ensured your privacy. He's even partnered with Facebook to keep you connected to your loved ones. Make the moral choice. Decide with Bing.
I'm Steve Ballmer, and I approve this message.